Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Adrian Bloom, editorial director of the magazine, and Bob Ferguson, president of Strategic Consulting. So welcome back, team.
Hi, Stacey.
Howdy.
Yeah. Howdy.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. See, I already got to tell everybody Happy New Year last time when y'all were, off having fun and stuff, so... As long as it's January, I still love wishing everybody Happy New Year till the end of January.
So. I was laying out in sunny Pennsylvania in January. That's what I was doing. That's right.
Yeah, just like Adrian. Right. And where was that?
No. The Caribbean. Yeah, okay. It was horrible.
See? Almost the same weather as Pennsylvania. Yeah.
All right. So for today's interview, Adrian speaks with two food safety and quality experts with Fresh Express, John Garisi, Vice President, Food Safety and Quality, and Herman Rios, Senior Director of Food Safety and Quality. So we reached out to Fresh Express after seeing their food safety and quality video series. You know, it really caught our eye because you don't see many food companies messaging directly to consumers about their food safety programs. So when we reached out, lucky for us, they agreed to join us on the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to hear some really interesting stuff from John and Herman about Fresh Express's food safety and quality program and how they work with their growers to verify testing and ensure FSQ and capture tracing information. So I think it's a pretty insightful discussion, and we also recommend checking out that Fresh Express video series on YouTube if you haven't already to learn more about that.
Okay, and we'll get to that right after the news. But before the news, I want to remind you that registration is now open for the Food Safety Summit Conference, produced by Food Safety Magazine, being held May 8th through the 11th in Rosemont, Illinois. And because we like to take good care of our dedicated podcast listeners, we have once again secured a very special discount code that will get you an extra 10% off whatever the going rate is, which for now means 10% off the early bird rates. There was a super early bird, but if you were super, super early bird, anyway, that one's passed. But the early bird is still there. Check out the agenda by visiting foodsafetysummit.com and then use the discount code FSM23PODCAST to save 10%. Again, that's FSM23PODCAST, and we sure hope to see you there. And don't forget, we have a great offer for groups so you can bring your whole team, as quite a few people do. And now it's time for some news.
Yeah, so moving on to the news. So in our news lineup today, we want to first discuss FDA's release of the 2022 version of the food code, which came out at the very end of December. Now, as many of you know, the food code provides guidance for states and localities to help retail food service operations mitigate foodborne illness outbreaks by providing a set of national standards for retail food safety. Now, this is voluntary. Of course, it's not federal law, but we think the food code is obviously very good guidance to follow. Now, the main changes in the 2022 food code include the addition of sesame as the 9th major allergen, and also adding labeling and additional consumer information for major allergens for unpackaged and self-dispensed food items. It also revises the definition of intact meat to include meats that are vacuum tumbled with solutions, and it clarifies the time and temperature cooking requirements for these meats. The 2022 code also creates new requirements for the allowance of pet dogs in outdoor dining spaces, and it addresses safe protocols for food that's intended to be used for food donations. And one more thing it does is lowers the required water temperature for hand washing sinks. So this year marks the 30th anniversary of the food code, which has been adopted by 49 states in some form. California is the only state that uses its own code.
Of course we do.
Yes, of course you do. Now, as of the end of 2021, 18 states were using the 2017 version of the food code, and 16 states were using the 2013 version. 15 other states, plus the District of Columbia, were using food code versions from 2009 or older. And it's hoped that the release of the 2022 version will bring more states on board with the updated version.
I like the fact that they've updated the food code. There's a lot of things in here that they changed that were edits and things like that, updating a lot of sort of what I would call housekeeping. I liked very much the fact that they lowered the hand washing temperature. There's a lot of misconception that the hotter water is somehow cleaner or antimicrobial. Believe me, the temperature of water that's antimicrobial, you're not washing your hands with. Boiling water doesn't help anybody. But lowering the temperature makes people more likely to wash their hands because it's a comfortable temperature instead of something super hot. So that's great.
But it's all about the soap.
It's all about the soap and it's all about the time. Yeah, that's right.
And the time.
That's right, yeah. I also like the fact that they updated that where you're allowed to have dogs in outdoor dining. And I looked up and 19 states allow dogs in outdoor dining area. And so they've updated that in the food code. So maybe other people will adopt that as well.
Well, I don't know. I was actually surprised to know that it wasn't a mandatory thing. So I was like, well, yes, we have a food code. There's something called a national food code, and it's adopted nationally. And I look at this, I go, oh, well, no, it's not. So that was a little bit surprising to me. But apparently, too, this is also put some pressure back on retailers, which relates back to that MOU that we mentioned earlier this year between FDA and CDC, that is the Retail Food Safety Association collaboration agreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we've definitely seen more of a focus on retail food safety from FDA recently. And another thing that we're excited about is that we're actually going to be speaking with FDA later in the year about the 30th anniversary of the food code. So stay tuned for that. We'll have more details soon on that upcoming discussion.
Apparently, I need to tune into that so that I can learn what's actually going
on. So next in our news lineup for this episode, we found an interesting study that we wanted to share with you. It's out of the universities of Campania and Salerno, and it shows the effectiveness of a novel organic acid compound against common foodborne pathogens and biofilm.
Drum roll, please, for this pronunciation.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right, we're going to try this here. The compound is called tetrapotassium aminodisuccinic acid salt. Thank you. Please clap.
There you go.
That's pretty good.
Or IDSK, which is much easier to say. Now, in the lab, the IDSK samples were shown to be effective against Salmonella enterica by 66%, by 55% against E. coli, and against Pseudomonas aeruginosa by 51%. Now, IDSK was also 89% effective against Staphylococcus aureus and 75% effective against Enterococcus faecalis. Now, the compound was also shown to be effective, though at slightly lower levels, against biofilms of these pathogens. And overall, the researchers concluded that IDSK showed efficient antibacterial activity against gram-positive and gram-negative strains, suggesting that IDSK, which is a stable, biodegradable, and environmentally friendly compound, could be a potential promising disinfectant for the food industry.
Well, I think these type of antimicrobial compounds and packaging and things like that, we've talked before about this being the future for a lot of this to improve shelf life and to improve food life. And in fact, in podcast 111, 1 year ago, pretty close to 1 year ago today, about 1 year ago now, we spoke to Phil Democritou, who's a professor from Harvard and Rutgers, who had been working on a biodegradable packaging made from starch, which include thyme and citric acid in there as an antimicrobial, but also biodegradable plastic, I guess you could call it plastic, biodegradable packaging. So this is the type of thing I think that's going to be much more common. And I had a chance to talk to Phil a little bit about that last year. We discussed it on the podcast, but these are the type of things, as well as it being biodegradable, that I think you're going to see a lot more of.
Well, anything in the fight for sustainability, less environmental impact, fighting those biofilms, it's certainly welcome. So we love being able to bring you guys all this new research as it comes out and see what comes to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, kind of continuing with that theme of sustainability, another scientifically interesting bit of news we'd like to share comes from the European Food Safety Authority, or EFSA, which recently determined that the safety of polyethylene terephthalate, or PET, is sufficient for use in food contact materials when produced by a process called polyrecycling. So in the process, PET flakes are collected from post-consumer non-food containers that include no more than 5% PET, and then they're washed and dried and heated in a reactor before being extruded. Now, the EFSA panel on food contact materials, enzymes, and processing aids conducted a risk assessment on the food safety of PET produced by the polyrecycling process and found that the high temperatures, pressures, and time used in the process discount the possibility of contamination by microorganisms. The process also reduces the possibility of accidental contamination of post-consumer food contact PET. Now, EFSA does recommend that periodic verification be completed for the input materials to ensure that they originate from articles that have been manufactured in accordance with EU regulations for food contact materials and that the proportion of PET is no more than 5% and comes from non-food materials. But it looks to be a promising recycling technology for the reuse of PET in the food industry.
So I mentioned a second ago that we know an expert in this field, Dr. Phil Demacredou from both Rutgers and Harvard. And I got a hold of him right before we recorded, and he said he's aware of the EFSA decision and the safety of recycled PET in food packaging. His comment was, recycling and reuse are good, but I'm going to read part of his comment. He said, however, this decision does not address the emerging crisis issue related to plastics, the so-called microplastics, which are the byproduct of the environmental degradation of plastics, including PET, over the years. And now I'll paraphrase it, but he goes, you know, these fragments are throughout the environment. And really what you want to get to is away from plastics, away from recycled plastics, although they're better than virgin plastics, but getting to something more like what I described they were working on, which is a starch-based biodegradable packaging, not just recycling plastic. So nod to recycled plastics versus not recycled, but move right past that and get to something biodegradable.
Yeah, I guess that was going to be my only comment too, is that, you know, certainly it's good to recycle if we do. The problem is we don't. The status that we're recycling 9% of plastics, of plastic waste globally. And that here's a stat that 22% are, quote, mismanaged, which means that they're just litter or they're, you know, who knows what. But I think that Phil's, I would just agree with that. I think that, you know, clearly we're not doing a good job here. but if there is a way to reclaim some of the plastics and reuse stuff that isn't currently being recycled, that's certainly good news. We just have a lot of work to do here.
Agreed.
So you may find this interesting. He ended his email by saying he has a few research projects in the lab in his center, including a new grant from USDA, which focuses on micro nanoplastics. So maybe we'll hear from Phil again pretty soon. This is a hot topic.
Okay.
Sounds like somebody we need to talk to further.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Thanks, Bob, for talking to Phil and getting those comments for us. So now, before we go, we have a couple of quick updates to share with you. Now, first, in case you didn't yet hear the news, possibly living under a rock, the Senate...
Which I sometimes do, so, you know, it's cozy.
It's you don't cozy like my there. Rock?
Yeah, it's a nice place. So the Senate has finally voted to confirm Dr. Jose Emilio Esteban as USDA Undersecretary of Food Safety on December 23rd of last year. Now, we've been waiting a while for confirmation of President Biden's 2021 nomination of Dr. Esteban, who has a wealth of experience at FSIS, the CDC, the Codex Alimentarius Commission, and in food safety and epidemiology. So that is a bit of good news. We also heard some updates recently from the Closer to Zero initiative, which FDA, USDA, and other federal agencies are involved in. Now, USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture, or NIFA, funded a workshop last April that identified several crucial working areas for reducing public exposure to toxic metals in the food supply. Now, a report summarizing the conclusions of that workshop was just recently released. These crucial working areas include more research, education, key issues and opportunities around soil chemistry, soil changes, and microbiome interactions with toxic elements, and also plant uptake and accumulation of toxic elements. The workshop also recommended the pursuit of multidisciplinary concerns such as food processing, detection and sensors, and metals interference with nutrition. Also, the workshop participants suggested that a funding mechanism should be established within NIFA to enable transdisciplinary research of toxic metals contamination of food, along with greater collaboration among industry, government, and academia on this issue to address the problem at a systems level.
Well, thanks, Adrian. That's actually a nice follow-up from our, you know, end-of-year episode, too, where we were talking about, you know, heavy metals in foods and baby foods, and that there's movement on all of that. So thanks again for a great news section. And as always, we will be providing links to all the stories that we've covered in our show notes. And you know, I always like to remind you to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Just search for Food Safety Magazine. And to take a deeper dive and maybe subscribe to some of our products, visit our website, food-safety.com.
What was that? Was it food?
Food-safety.com. Bob, you had nothing on there. You were nowhere in
there.
Come
on, Bob.
I'm just focused on the dash.
He's just dashing about over there.
Right.
I'm on dash or on dancer.
No, we're past that.
Yeah, you got to have that dash. Well, actually, it is pretty important. It won't work without the dash.
Right. Doesn't work without the dash.
Need the dash.
It doesn't.
Don't forget the dash.
Okay.
We're getting t-shirts that say that for the summit.
Yeah, food dash.
Right. Doesn't work. On the back, it'll say, doesn't work without the dash. Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Buy one today.
Okay, now it's time for Adria's interview with John Garusi and Herman Rios from Fresh Express. John Garusi is Vice President of Food Safety and Quality at Fresh Express, where he has broad food safety responsibility for growing, manufacturing, new product assessment, customer collaboration, supplier management, and regulatory compliance. He leads a multidisciplinary food safety and quality team covering the United States, Canada, and Mexico, and directs a multi-million dollar implementation and investment budget. John holds numerous industry-critical food safety certifications and has contributed his technical expertise to wide-ranging industry initiatives. He serves as an active contributor to the Center for Produce Safety's Technical Committee and the International Fresh Produce Association's Food Safety Council, and is past vice chair and executive board member of the Conference for Food Protection. Prior to joining Fresh Express, John led global fresh produce food safety and quality initiatives for Darden Restaurants, a premier full-service dining company with over 1,800 locations worldwide. Herman Rios is the Senior Director of Food Safety and Quality for Fresh Express, where he's responsible for food safety and quality assurance in growing, manufacturing, new product development, and customer collaboration. He also manages the Fresh Express Raw Partner Product Program and Ingredient Suppliers, which encompass the United States, Mexico, and Canada. Herman graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a crop science degree. And now, here's the interview.
Well, I am here today with John Garusi, Vice President, Food Safety and Quality for Fresh Express, and also Herman Rios, Senior Director of Food Safety and Quality for Fresh Express. So it is so great to have both of you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Adrian. This is John. Thank you very much for having us.
Hi, Adrian. This is Herman. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Now, I know that at Fresh Express, you evaluate your growers before you partner with them, and then you check back with them throughout the growing cycle through audits and visits and other assessments. So I'm curious, what kinds of technical verification do you perform during these different assessments?
Well, Adrian, we are fortunate to partner with several high-quality growers who actually also have their own food safety teams. And in addition, we also have our own food safety team, our boots in the field team that really are out in the fields each and every day. And they're working alongside with our grower partners. And they also make sure that they're following the proper good agricultural practices. And they conduct several different types of audits. And just to name a few, one of them is the grower ranch assessment. Another one is a harvester sanitation audit. We also have a harvester operations audit. And we actually also have a porta potty audit as well to make sure that those porta potties in the fields are kept clean and maintained properly. As an example of the grower ranch assessment, because that's probably one of our main auditing functions, is several of the programs that we look at specifically within that assessment is one is the type of water that is being used, the type of irrigation that is being used. We look at adjacent lands and are there any hazards or potential hazards from adjacent lands, such as cattle, animals, foreign materials, etc. And then we also look at soil amendments and how they're being used and what they are, mitigations that are used to keep animals out, whether it be fencing or traps or sound devices. And then we also look closely at pesticide usage to make sure they're following proper procedures and labels. And then also take a close look at the restroom facilities as well.
Well, that sounds like a very thorough program and really interesting stuff there. So thank you for explaining that, John. Now, my next question for you guys is about your food safety and quality video series on YouTube that offers a behind-the-scenes look at Fresh Express's food safety and quality program. It covers critical controls and procedures along the entire supply chain from field to table. And I've watched the entire series. It's really enlightening, very interesting, and very well put together. So really cool look inside the operations. So in one of those videos in the series, it discusses the food safety training and continuing education that new and existing Fresh Express employees receive at the Fresh Express University. I love that title. So I know that you have supervisors in place who monitor employee procedures. So I'm curious, what points in the operation do your supervisors monitor? And, you know, do they do this in person, remotely, or do you have a combination of both? And, you know, how does the chain of command work if a line employee does detect a problem?
Yeah, thank you for the compliment on the video series. And yes, we have supervisors and specialists monitoring quality and food safety from the fields all the way through our coolers and through our processing plants, all the way to the shipping dock. I'd say today, the majority of the supervising is done with our boots on the ground approach again. However, Fresh Express, we have taken FDA's new era of smarter food safety initiative to heart. You know, so much so that currently, we are hard at work in a few of its core elements. And one of these core elements is smarter tools. Fresh Express is moving to a quality and food safety electronic data collection platform where our corporate quality and food safety managers will be notified every time there's a deviation to our quality and food safety standards. And this is really all about automating all of the data points that we collect throughout our system, whether it be in the ag ops area and in the fields, going all the way to our processing plants. We have many forms and many checks, and we are transitioning from a manual system to this automated system. So we will certainly gain much better data. It'll be more accurate, and it'll be readily available for audits, as well as be able to really utilize the data to help us tell us and be proactive with food safety and what trends are developing, so that if there is an unfavorable trend, that we can address it immediately before it becomes a problem.
Yeah, John, I'm not sure if you want to add a little bit more about the master pack verification system, or would you like me to take that on?
No, that's fine. I can handle that one, Herman. So another example of using the smarter tools, as Herman mentioned, is the master pack verification system. The master pack verification system helps us prevent any allergen-related recalls. And in the past, we've had to conduct a few recalls for having the wrong master pack, which contains the condiments for a salad, which are very popular nowadays. They also contain allergens, and sometimes those master packs end up going into the wrong bag, and so the declaration on the allergen statement is incorrect. When that happens, obviously there's a significant public health risk, but also too, we will necessitate a recall. So to avoid that, we implemented a camera system that reads each and every master pack as it's being dropped into the bagger that goes directly into a salad bag. There's also a camera at the bottom reading the 2D code that is on the packaging film, and it must match the 2D code that is on the master pack. If those two don't match, then the system quickly shuts down, and then QA has to come over, do an evaluation, do an assessment, remove any of the incorrect master packs, ensure that the right master pack is going in, and QA is the only approved department that can then release that machine and turn it back on. So it's really paid a lot of dividends to us in avoiding master pack related allergen recalls.
Really interesting. And, you know, it sounds like an incredible traceability effort. And, you know, at the time of recording this interview, I know we're all looking forward to the release of FSMA 204 soon here. So, mm-hmm. You know, obviously traceability is on everybody's minds at this point. So really, really interesting. Now, you also talk in the series about establishing a HACCP plan through a cross-functional corporate team to better organize the more than 50 quality checks that are performed on Fresh Express products and to ensure food safety and quality. So my question is, how have you evolved and perfected that HACCP program since its introduction? And how do you communicate knowledge about HACCP to employees?
Yeah, Adrian, here at Fresh Express, our HACCP plan is in a continuous state of evolution, right? So I don't know if I would go as far as saying it as it's if it's perfect. I think the No Food Safety program is ever perfect. And if you do believe that it's perfect, I think you need to do a little bit more digging and taking a closer look at that food safety program. I mean, there's always so much new information coming in that we must evaluate. At the same time, there's a lot of new technology coming in. So we're starting to get a lot more better information, better, quicker information. So again, I think it's very important for us to be able to review and amend our food safety plan as critical events happen, you know, whether it's here in our facility or even in our industry, right? We need to kind of gather all that information, digest it, and take a closer look at our, see if there's any changes or any amendments that we need to make to our food safety or HACCP plan. If it's a quiet year, which unfortunately we haven't had one of those in a few years, or our industry, we do have a program in place to ensure that we're reviewing that at least once a year. As far as that there's a lot of information on these HACCP plans and these food safety plans that need to make sure that we're communicating to our workforce, properly, right? There's no point in developing and changing your food safety plan if you're not going to do a good job in communicating that down to the floor level. So one of the things that we'll do, to ensure that we're communicating these changes is, we have different formats to be able to do that. One is we'll take the opportunity of huddles, right? We love huddles here at Fresh Express. In the fields, we'll call them tailgates. In the facility, they're more like huddles, right? So very customary at the beginning of the shift to do some stretching before we start packing our salads in our boxes. So what we got to make sure is as we're doing those stretches, take that opportunity, those 5 minutes to just, give a hot topic of discussion to the team members. From time to time too, as there's bigger issues that come up, we will call in our staff members 15 minutes early into the cafeteria, and we'll have a formal meeting, right? And then kind of as ongoing, just so we continue to make sure that our team members are on top of our food safety program, as well as all new employees coming into Fresh Express understand the requirements. We use a training system platform that we are able to evolve, add new training material, and it's all kind of computer-based system. So, the tracking is on down. We're able to see about who's completing these trainings, who do we need to catch up on, and just ensure that there is a good training all the way around for all of our employees. So, yeah.
I would just like to add, if I might, to Herman's comments on this one, and that food safety and any changes are communicated in addition to what Herman had mentioned at during top management meetings that the facilities hold on a monthly basis. And also during department meetings within the facilities, food safety is a high value within our company. I like to say that our food safety culture and food safety in general is much more of a value with Fresh Express versus a priority. As we all know, priorities do change. So this is something that's embedded within our DNA is food safety. So every opportunity that is available, food safety is on the agenda, whether it be an operations meeting or a maintenance meeting. Food safety is part of that and is expected to be part of that. And I think that the use of the daily huddles, as Herman mentioned, is also a good tool to have just quick meetings to inform employees and give them reminders of what's going on in the day, what issues might have happened the shift before, or certain things to focus on. So I think communications and training is key to success for any kind of food safety program.
Absolutely. Thank you both for that great background. And Herman, I really like the idea of having a food safety learning moment during those calisthenics that people, you know, do to prepare for the packing. That's great. So you guys also talk about being among the first companies to create a food safety and quality program for produce crops. Now, can you provide some background on that and how it guides your operations?
Sure. Fresh Express has a long and rich history going back to probably the late 1920s, but I don't want to bore you and the listeners to a history lesson. But starting more recently, in 1976, that was the year that Fresh Express recognized that food safety needed to be important and part of the growing company that Fresh Express was becoming. So we were among the first companies that were developing good agricultural practices in the fields, and also among the first to develop good manufacturing practices in produce processing facilities, which were just, you know, really starting to come to be. In 1976, additionally, we introduced the first packaged ready-to-eat salad. This went to food service customers. And due to this short shelf life of that product, it was suited for food service customers. However, advancements were made, technological advancements were made in that we were able to extend the shelf life by looking at the different films and atmospheres contained in there. And so once we were able to extend it more in 1983, we started shipping salads, ready-to-eat salads to retail customers so that consumers can directly enjoy them.
Interesting. And so have you updated any elements of that food safety and quality program over the past few years?
Yes, we have. And I think, you know, as I think Herman mentioned earlier, we're always in a state of revising and moving forward and looking forward and trying to improve our current program. But I think a very good example is our efforts toward the parasite Cyclospora. Cyclospora is an emerging pathogen of concern for food, although it's been documented to have been around since probably the late 1990s and started with fresh produce and I think raspberries. But more recently, in the last several years, Cyclospora, I should say, has always been thought of to be a parasite endemic to southern Mexico, Central and South America, and other parts of the world that have more of a subtropical, tropical climate, but not in the United States. So it was really brought to light that, you know, maybe with the changing climate that that we are experiencing. But now cyclospora has been found in fresh produce grown in the United States. It's also been found in waters in the United States. So we know it's here. So based on that, we have taken several steps to help mitigate it. The problem with cyclospora, and there's many, that we just don't know what we don't know about cyclospora. And there's a lot of research that's going on, a lot of good research from researchers that are being funded by the Center for Produce Safety, as an example. But we still don't know a lot, but we do know one fact, and that it's for Cyclospora chiantanensis, humans are the only known host. So we have to follow human activity, follow the poo, if you will. And so our efforts are guided towards that. And so what we've done is in the harvesting areas, as an example, we've required our harvesting companies that we work with to have hands-free washing faucets. We ask that all the harvesters change their gloves every time they come and go back into the field. We actually have our harvesters cut dedicated paths into and out of the fields so that harvesters or other people working in the fields don't have to step over produce. They follow the path. In addition, we ask our harvesting companies to have dedicated restroom monitors during the cyclospora season. And traditionally, that cyclospora season is May through August. Also very important is the porta potties and where they're being cleaned out, how they're being cleaned out. And so back to my previous comment about the porta potty audits, this is where this is comes in. So we have our own Fresh Express auditing team that does unannounced harvesting audits and porta potty audits to make sure these measures are in place.
That's great. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about all the different, you know, control measures essentially that you guys are incorporating in the field. And, you know, definitely sounds like, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff happening there. So I want to go back and discuss for a moment back to the topic of traceability. So your video series also discusses an improved production traceability system that uses scanners and radio frequency identification or RFID tagging to provide real-time information about all raw materials used in Fresh Express products. Now, how does the system keep the lots traceable amid all the processing steps and transfers and mixing? And how does it help ensure food safety and quality through traceback?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Adrian. So let me try to take a stab at it, and I'll have John add anything to it if I leave anything behind. As this is a very complex topic, as you mentioned it here, you know. So we have taken, you know, and we for a very long time, Fresh Express has had a robust traceability program, but you're spot on with kind of your question there. You know, one of the biggest problems is that in our facility, because of, you know, trim lines and hoppers, you know, we have multiple hoppers across many facilities. And what ends up happening is that, you know, product kind of tends to go everywhere. So we've always had great traceability from the field into our facility and then from our facility to our customers, right? The big question has been, well, what happens in the middle? One of the biggest opportunities that we have been coming across is if we're taking a look at multiple days, multiple shifts, then we have to go back and try to do a root cause analysis on, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 different ranches, right? Which is really not practical. And then you're also dealing with kind of a delay of getting back there, right? So we saw that, you know, right as FDA kind of announced the new era of food safety initiative. What we did is we took that to heart and started to implement and enhance our traceability program. It's still under development. I think we'll be completing that over the next 6 months or so. But the way it's going to work is today, like we mentioned, all of our raw material coming in is barcoded, and all the information on you know, by scanning that barcode, you could get all the information of grower, ranch grower, and basically lot. What we do is when that product arrives into our facility, what we're now starting to implement is we are now grabbing those bins, and as we're putting them into the tipping buckets to go into the trim lines, we are able to scan that specific lot with what line are we putting are we putting it on and processing on. Then kind of the thought process here to eliminate and be able to narrow down on where the product is going, what we did is we worked very hard on establishing an RFID tag system. It's like a stainless steel, you know, coin, the size of a coin. We figured out a way to how to hygienically design, place it in every single dryer basket, as dryer baskets in our industry is the main form of moving product from the trim deck to the dryer basket and into the hopper. And what we do is kind of taking, embracing that same technology of think of a car in the highway as it's passing through the toll booth, right? Or as it's coming into the freeway, you know, you have your reader on your windshield, and as it's going through the tunnel, and, you know, there's a series of antennas. It's the same methodology that we're doing. So now what we've done is, since all of our baskets have RFID tags, we have antennas right after the trim line that's reading and saying, hey, this dryer basket, I'm feeding product into this dryer basket. And then from there, we have the ability to be able to utilize that dryer basket, drop it into the hopper that's going to lead into the packaging line. And then from there, we have another antenna that's saying, hey, you know, product that came from here went into this basket, got dropped into this hopper and into the line. Like I said, you know, we're tying the loose ends right now, trying to put it all together. But the one thing that, you know, I'm very excited to say the least is the ability to be able to, you know, zero in on our root cause analysis. Today, you know, taking a step back, that is one of the biggest issues that our industry has, is that many times when incidences happen, the root cause is really not defined. You know, we start talking about generalization and saying, yeah, you know, it seems like this issue was related to adjacent land, and it's in this particular area, but we're never able to hone into anything closer to that. So we're very hopeful, and the objective is that at the end of the day, by being able to narrow down on the scope, we're going to be able to do that. It's going to be able to tell us, instead of giving us 100 different lots, we're going to be able to say, hey, if we know that this bag had a problem, we are going to be able to go directly to the source, know the lines that we use, know the hoppers that we use, and ultimately what was the grower, the ranch, and the lot that was used, right, to be able to help us out. Also, you know, we could see down the road, you know, food safety is huge, but, you know, same concept for quality, right? If we have quality issues, it's going to be able to help us determine exactly what that raw material in that bag was used. The one final step after we tying all this up, you know, this is another, just like our food safety program, you know, with, you know, how much technology is coming in, this is going to be in a constant state of evolution. And the next step to do is, you know, we want to know what we want to do ultimately is, in order to have a very sound traceability program, you want to eliminate as much of the human interaction as possible. So what we're looking to do is to get away from the barcoding system. And there are now, you know, RFID tags, and they've been around for a while. There's RFID stickers that you could embed into your corrugate bins. So once again, by the use of antennas, you're able to, on the field, upload the information into the RFID stickers as the product is being harvested, being able to even hone in even more by saying, hey, by the use of geolocation, I harvested this bin from this specific area in the field. And then as it's coming into the facility, you know, what we're aspiring to is to just have a series of antennas to be able to put these antennas. And as that bin is moving through the different stages, it's being able to pick up, and you know exactly what line, and we're eliminating the need for a forklift driver to be scanning that specific barcode to that trim line. So yeah, it's been very exciting, and you know, it's been a lot of long hours, but it's been very interesting work with all of our engineers and our IT team on this topic.
So that's super interesting information, Herman, and you know, it definitely sounds like you guys are far ahead on the traceability front. And you know, it's interesting you alluded to root cause analysis, and you know, I think we know that especially in produce, root cause is more complex and difficult just because of all the you know, the various different factors with growing conditions and things like that. So thought it was interesting you brought that up, and thanks for including that in the conversation. But yeah, the traceability initiatives you guys are employing in your facilities sounds super interesting and obviously very helpful to the operations. So continuing with the theme of processing, so you have a video on the salad bowl kit production process at your Morrow, Georgia plant is really interesting. And there's a lot of information about hygienic design and sanitation in that video, and also the specially designed equipment and higher air pressure in that production area. So I'm also curious about the scope of your environmental monitoring program for that area. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, Adrian, you know, again, the USDA facility in our Morrow plant in Georgia has been another, you know, exciting and most recent builds here at Fresh Express. This facility was designed, you know, a few years ago. And it is a USDA regulated facility. See, here in our industry, we've been practicing hygienic design for some time already. We've done many years of trying to understand and having great mentors teach us on hygienic design and how to improve and making sure that, you know, we're taking into consideration, you know, any possible niches that might be growing in the facility, as well as how can we make a senator's life easier. With that being said, you know, we collected all those elements that we've gathered throughout the years, and we've created this facility with a lot of hygienic design in mind. So our processing facility, we have positive air pressure coming out. So trying to keep anything from coming in. We've spent a lot of time in making sure that we develop this facility with hygienic zoning in mind. Our equipment, making sure, like I said, that we eliminate, you know, niches, any rough welds, any of that, you know, what has now become as basic stuff, right? Getting away from hollow rollers, you know, trying to eliminate that, trying to make easy release bounce to make sure that senators are able to get to those hard to reach places at a higher frequency. With that being said, while that is very important, making sure that we do all of that, you know, to try to tackle your question, our environmental program is a kind of a multifaceted approach, right? And where, you know, on a daily basis after every cleaning, we want to make sure that we are following up with random ATP testing, right? Just to give us a good indication and measure the effectiveness of sanitation. In addition to that, we'll focus a little bit on a weekly basis, a very robust program, not a little bit, on a very robust program, actually. We have aerobic plate counts that we're doing. Obviously, there is a little bit of a delay there since you have to wait about 48 hours to get those results. But once again, we target those APCs and food contact areas and just a little bit harder to reach places to just ensure that our senators are getting to those hard to reach places. And then following, you know, as an addition to that, Listeria species is something that we're very concerned in our processing facilities because of the ability for Listeria to grow in cold temperatures, right? So we want to make sure that we have a very robust program on a weekly basis, trying to capture beginning of the shift. So after the cleaning process, prior to sanitation, we want to go in there and look for Listeria. In addition to that, we'll have some, our program calls for mid-shift swabbing as well, right? After the belt has been running for multiple hours, we want to see if there's anything oozing out of rollers or anything like that we want to, you know, just ensure that we're not growing niches or harboring or Listeria has found a home in our facility.
I'd also like to add that, you know, at Fresh Express, you know, in not only in the Morrow Georgia facility, but also all of our facilities, we really do take a very aggressive approach in our environmental monitoring program. And we encourage the folks that are doing the sampling, the swabbing, to really take a search and destroy mentality, as well as method, you know, get underneath equipment, crawl up to those hard to reach areas and get those niches where we need to really dig in and see if there's any kind of biofilm buildup or growth or any other kind of debris that could harbor Listeria. But also too, beyond that, we do conduct yearly swabathons in all of our facilities. And this is an opportunity for our corporate team to come into each facility and to do this swabathon and to see if there's anything that we can find while we're doing the swabbing, and making sure that if there's any places that were missed during the routine monitoring, that we're hitting those and just really digging in deep. And in addition to that, we work with very closely in all of our facilities with Joe Stout, whom I think you're familiar with, Adrian.
Yes, very, and, yeah.
And his commercial food sanitation team we have for, the last 6 years or so. And really, we've learned a lot from Joe and his team, and they keep pushing us forward with sanitation and hygienic design, not only in our facilities, but now also out in the fields, as there's a huge industry effort to look at hygienic design and sanitation of harvesting equipment. So he's been a real asset, not only to us, but the entire industry.
Fantastic. Thank you both for that info. And, you know, it's interesting, as Herman and John, you were talking about the environmental monitoring program at that plant, it was actually making me think about an article that we have that is coming out in our December-January issue by Dr. Jana Hamlet. She's one of our frequent expert authors. She's at the University of Idaho. And she wrote an excellent article for us on successful pathogen environmental monitoring programs. And everything you were naming basically was right down her checklist, everything that you need to do to have a successful EMP. So, you know, it sounds like you guys are doing all the right stuff, and that's fantastic to hear. And my last question for you today is, now you currently require your growers to take monthly pre-harvest water and produce samples to ascertain the absence of pathogenic bacteria. And I know that you test your water for E. coli twice per month. Now, my question is, if FDA's proposed revisions to the agricultural water requirements of the FSMA produce safety rule are passed, which we know would require a systems-based approach to pre-harvest ag water assessments that would replace the pre-harvest microbial water criteria and testing requirements, now, do you anticipate that these changes would impact your safety and testing procedures? And, you know, if so, how?
Yeah, very good question. You know, obviously, we haven't seen the final requirements coming out yet. Mm-hmm. But from what we know, I would say that the short answer for us is it will not have significant impact. And I say that probably not just for Fresh Express, but other leafy green producers as well, especially those that are operating under the Leafy Green Marketing Agreement, or LGMA, requirements. Because about 2 to 3 years ago, the water requirements that are contained in the Leafy Green Marketing Agreement that the growers abide by really already calls for, and our own Fresh Express standard calls for, is a water system risk assessment to be completed. So that's our growers and us, we're already familiar with that approach. I think we'll need to find out some more of the details of what's contained in the FDA's final regulation on that. But I think right now we're well positioned. Unlike the FDA's requirement. We still will require testing as part of the LGMA standard as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, we're very well positioned for that. And I don't know, Herman, I'll turn over, I'll turn it over to you for any other comments too, since you're closer to this area than I am.
Yeah. So in addition to that, like I said, I have to agree with John's comment there of you know, not having a significant impact with us. Again, I think we've been playing by a higher set of standards just because we have to, Adrian. But in addition to that, for many years, as John is explaining, you know, interestingly enough already, we kind of get the thought process that FDA is thinking. And yes, a risk-based approach, a system-based approach is very important. So we've already have been requiring that from our growers at the beginning of the season, at least once, if not after every unusual weather event that might occur. We need them and we want them to be looking at their water system and seeing if there's any implication to it. Water is extremely important to the growing process of leafy greens, as you guys could imagine. So with that being said, we on a yearly basis, seasonally, you know, regardless, not a lot changes in these, but just out of abundance of caution, we want them to make sure that they understand, you know, what is their distribution system looks like, you know, where are they positioning things, you know, as far as again, adjacent land is, you know, is your reservoirs close to a cliff where maybe you've had some cows lingering around, or do you have a lot of avian activity in and around that field? Again, you know, many times, like for example, when we're in a growing region, we move away from that growing region because of undesirable weather conditions, right? So that's when we need those growers and our kind of systems-based approach to really understand, hey, well, what happened during that off season, right? We're always so concentrated about the today and making sure that we're harvesting, but what happened in January or February in Salinas Valley while everybody's focused in Yuma, you know, did that big rain event, you know, that had excess runoff water impact any of the fields, right? So those are, or your water supply. So those are the type of questions that we've already been implementing, and regardless of FDA's final requirement that we will ensure we're abide and align to, we don't see, at least for Fresh Express, the E. coli testing, the generic E. coli testing going away anytime soon. I think it's just very important to continue to truly understand your water quality, regardless if you had a problem or not.
That's great to hear. And thanks for the clarification on that question, both of you. And it's good to hear that you're going above and beyond, you know, at Fresh Express. And again, so we're going to include the links to that video series in the show notes for you all, the audience. And so you can go ahead and watch that if you haven't seen them already. It's an excellent video series. I highly recommend you check it out if you haven't seen it. And John, Herman, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and sharing your insights and all this great information about how Fresh Express works and your operations. Really insightful stuff, and we appreciate you being here today.
Well, thank you, Adrian, very much. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, Adrian.
Thanks again to John Guirisi and Herman Rios for joining us on the podcast today. And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. Don't hesitate. Please send us questions or suggestions to podcast@food-safety.com or post a note on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook. We're always happy to get your feedback. And you want to make sure that new and bonus episodes magically appear in your podcast player. All you have to do is click that follow or subscribe button in the player of your choice and presto, bingo. And while you're there, please throw some stars our way by rating the podcast, especially if you enjoyed it. It only takes a moment and it's good for everyone. All right, that's it for us today. Our next regular episode will post on February 7th. In the meantime, take good care of yourselves and those around you, and we'll talk to you then.
Just maniacal laughter. That's a great transition.
I know, it is better. It is better for me.
I just want to read a news story and have Stacey just laugh after each one. Welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast where Stacey loses her shit.